Hi, this is Tracy Swedlow, Editor-in-Chief of Interactive TV Today, and this is...
Colin Dixon, who is Founder and Chief Analyst at Endscreen Media.
And we've come together to produce this new radio podcast called...
Tea Time!
So, the goal of Tea Time, and looks like we've gotten some really good positive feedback after our first show, right, Colin?
We did, yeah. I heard from lots of folks who seemed to really enjoy it, so hopefully they'll enjoy this one too.
And the focus of Tea Time is going to be news that we cover, and we'll have guests, but it's all about tea, what we're drinking, tech, television, tomorrowism, what else?
Well, I think that pretty much covers it.
That's it. Okay.
Lots of future forward stuff. And we do have a guest for today, which we'll get to in just a moment. But we've got a sort of theme going here, Tracy, right? There's a great story out of Netflix. Tell us what Netflix are doing. They're doing some interactivity, right?
Yeah, well, you know, this has been going on for the last couple of years, although this announcement that they're going to try an interactive show using Charlie Brooker's Black Mirror series. You know, that news just came out on Monday from an anonymous source that was reported through Bloomberg. It's all very exciting. This is not the first project that they've launched. They did Puss in Book, which is based on the, Puss in Boots, the children's story. And they did launch that offering very kind of quietly on their platform. And so they must have gotten great data. And I've been always very curious about that. They've been extremely tight-lipped about how that did. But obviously, they're willing to pursue this. And of course, Charlie Brooker, the genius that he is, and the person who is willing to take risks, they're doing something together. So I can't wait to see what this will be. And I believe it's going to be based on the technology that they also bought from the Choose Your Own Adventure storybooks. Do you remember those when you were a kid? Did you ever have one of those?
I don't think I did, Tracy. I mean, I grew up in a different country, so maybe we didn't have those. I don't know. I don't remember them.
So I'm very, very excited about this. I sort of dug up a little bit more information on this, which is that it's not going to be available on, I believe, Chromecast and Apple TV. Not yet. Which is interesting because Apple promised about a year ago that they were really going to wrap themselves around interactive TV, shows and applications. So I'm wondering why they have decided not to do that yet. And that what else is happening? I think that this is going to be a huge experiment to see if interactive content targeted towards adults becomes popular, because interactive TV is very difficult to invent, to create, to enable technologically. But with all of these platforms out there delivering streaming technology and two-screen interactivity and other people experimenting with these things on other platforms, that this might actually grab people's attention. We might see this actually have some traction. So I'm really looking forward to the launch of this. I don't think that they have said exactly when it's coming out, but I believe, I'll have to go back and look, I think it's supposed to be happening at some point by the end of this year, end of 2018.
So yeah, that should be really exciting. I'm like you, it's kind of confusing. We've been talking about doing interactive television for, oh my gosh, two decades, possibly longer than that. And the idea, I think, has been sort of pretty fleshed out, I think, in some circumstances, but we've really not seen any examples of big successes. I know Jesse Redness did some really good stuff with interactivity when he was at Sci-Fi, USA Network, excuse me, USA Network, which with Psych, yeah. But it really didn't alter the direction of the story, and by all accounts, that's exactly what this is going to do. I've heard lots of arguments against doing this, that people don't really want to interact with their TV when they're into a story. So figuring out how to put that interactivity in our hands where it's not disruptive but really draws us into the story is, I think, if they get it right, will be a major thing, right, Tracy? Because this is something, as I say, we've talked about for so long, but nobody's really believed it is possible to even do it.
Well, it takes courage. It takes vision. It takes commitment to figuring out the, you know, the chart, you know, where you can figure out how the interactivity works. So, I commend Netflix. I commend the Charlie Brooker team over at House of Tomorrow, and I think it's Endemol Shine that they're taking this on. I think that's fantastic. There have been other experiments this year that kind of went nowhere, right? Steven Soderbergh launched his long-form series Mosaic, which was a piece of big news, but it really didn't rise to the surface as a, you know, a big hit in any way. And but we have, of course, we are seeing quite a lot of interactivity happening on, like on the mobile phone, right? For games like HQ, where people are completely engaged, hundreds of thousands, even millions of people are engaged with content. But that's live streamed game content. So we'll see. I, you know, of course, the reason why we even started interactive TV today was because we were convinced, you know, that this was something that needed to happen. I do know that interactive ads, and we're going to be hearing from, speaking of a guest, we're going to be hearing from Tal Chalozin, who is CTO at Innovid, and he's going to talk all about the new platform that's going to be delivering ads to OTT platforms, and interactivity is really important. So it's not just content, it's also advertising. I'm optimistic.
Yeah, me too. It sounds very exciting. It sounds very exciting approach for them to take. And you know, I'm glad you mentioned advertising because one of the things I noticed this week, Tracy, is just that advertising really seems to be coming to the fore. A lot of the focus of online video has been with subscription VOD, which doesn't include advertising. And obviously, we have some 200 plus services here. I think there's 100 plus in the UK now. So there really hasn't been a tremendous focus on free-to-web advertising supported content because so much of the, I think our focus has been sucked up by subscription video on demand and just enjoying the uninterrupted viewing process. But that really seems to be changing now. I mean, I note that FreeWheel in their monetization report say that the online video ads have grown 35% between Q2 2017 and Q2 2018, and that's on a 17% for the previous year. So that actually seems to be accelerating, which is good to see. Now, some of that is due, I think, to the Winter Olympics and the Super Bowl and FIFA World Cup. But let's be honest, there's not a lot of opportunity to advertise during the World Cup, so I don't know how much factor that is. But what I am seeing online is I'm just seeing a whole raft of services that some of them have been kicking around for quite a while, but other new ones are stepping in that are really, I think, expanding the inventory, right?
I mean, new services expanding, absolutely. Just today, actually, formally stage launched a new service all about the theater world, which we profiled in an interview with Rich Affanato. And I know what we're very interested in what Pluto's doing.
Yep, Pluto is doing great. We're hoping to snag them to get them on the podcast coming up very soon. They say they have now 10 million monthly active users. Zumo has 3.5 million. But we also seen launches. I love this. I don't know if you've seen Dreams. It's a new free ad-supported TV service for your smartphone. This was started by I think somebody for one of the founders of Instagram I forget where the other. I think the other person maybe came from Google, and it's a really cool service. It's actually you can watch it. Well, it's old library content. They've got Food Network and Home and Garden TV, but they also have old episodes of Batman and older shows as well. But the unique thing about this, Tracy, is that they allow you to watch in a vertical mode. So somehow they've gone in and processed the video so that they track the action and it works in a vertical mode. You can watch horizontally if you want. You can turn the phone, but that's kind of an unnatural way to hold the phone. So that's their really big shtick here. And I just think, you know, everything seems to be right for this environment, right? 7 in 10 viewers in the US now are using SVOD services. And when you're there, it's just a natural to start searching for other content. And it's great that now that there is this raft of free content. Of course, I forgot to mention the Roku channel, which has done amazing things for Roku. I mean, my goodness, it's now driving $60 billion in quarterly revenue at Roku, basically from a standing start 1 year ago, which is pretty amazing performance.
They're like the little engine that could, you know? I mean, there are so many other platforms out there who started before they did, and their strategy was always the most content possible, you know, put it on there, put it all on there. And so much so that you can't possibly find every channel that they have on there, and yet they continue to grow. I wonder if they're making their money from delivering all of that, all of those ads to long tail content.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they say. I mean, I ran the numbers. They didn't precisely say 60 million, but they said 90 million was the revenue they got from their platform business, and that 2/3 of that came from advertising. So. You know,
but is it to long tail content, or is it to, you know, stuff that, you know, premium programming? I mean, I'm curious.
So they have a really good strategy. I love their strategy here. So they are licensing some content. So, for example, they've now got the 3 Matrix movies, and that's available advertising supported on the Roku channel. But they're also partnering with other content providers on Roku, and working with them to bring free content into the channel. They're sharing some of the revenue, and they're also helping, that of course helps these other services be found. This is, you know, helps people find their service, and so that they can transfer and load their channel. So I think it's a pretty good synergistic strategy that they've picked here. And, you know, the numbers seem to say that it's really working. They say that this channel, the Roku channel, is now the 5th most popular channel on the platform, and as I say, in just a year, that's pretty amazing performance.
Tal has just popped on. Tal, are you there?
I am. Hello.
Oh, hello.
Hey, Tal.
It was a natural.
Hey, Tracy. Yeah.
Okay, great. We're glad you could make it. Just at a good point as well. So, I was just thinking about the tea I was drinking because we didn't say. I just, for the record, I'm drinking Dragon Well green tea and having some McVitie's milk chocolate biscuits.
Well, I'm sticking with my Yorkshire Gold, no cookies.
I just have tea in my name. I don't have any real tea.
That's okay. Right. So we're welcoming you on here to talk a little bit about the thing that you just launched called OTT Composer. And of course, you're CTO at Innovid. Colin, I think I interrupted you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I was just about to jump in and say the same thing. So Tal, please tell us about OTT Composer. It's really exciting.
Of course. First of all, thank you so much for having me on Tea Time. This is definitely exciting. The story of the product that we just launched called OTT Composer is that we, first of all, maybe I'll describe it and then tell why is this, why we think that this is big and very cool. So this is a self-service experience builder, purpose-built for television or for the OTT space. What does that mean? That means that this is a product, a self-service product, that I'm very sorry that you and the listeners cannot see that, but you can go to innovid.com. /OTT-composer to see all of it. That's a product that television network as well as creative agencies or media buyers can use as an authoring tool to take their video and add more interactive, engaging, personalized, data-driven, any of those things, components to that. So the background noise. What the tool looks very much like any type of video authoring tool, like an Adobe Premiere or Final Cut or an After Effects. So this is a video authoring tool. It's used for, again, as I mentioned, for a TV network to upload a TV commercial and add those elements to them. To give you an example, the simplest example would be an interactive experience that any Hulu, for example, is one of our launch partners that was on the record saying that they're using that product. Now allow advertisers to very easily supersize their commercial with overlays, with interactive elements, with the capability to text or send a message to a phone. So say if it's a theatrical trailer, anyone can enter their phone number in order to get a link to actually buy those tickets right now, or to get digital coupons. We have quite a lot of advertisers that are using digital couponing capability or anything of that sort. So taking a video to the next level in a very easy way. I'll just say one last thing, and that. Sorry.
No, keep going. I have my question ready when you're done.
So I'll just say one thing is that. The reason of doing all of that, and I'm sure a lot of those ideas of interactive video, nothing here is new. You guys have been in this space for many, many years and know and heard all of it a long time. But in the big picture, if you think about all the very large advertising platforms, thinking is that the only and very, very large success story of interactive video would be TrueView on YouTube. The reason being is that that's a product that has an interactive as a component in it that lets people click to skip a video, but that's more than just creating interactive video. They actually created a change in mindset and in perception and even created expectations for viewers that there's a new type of commercial. If they don't like it, they can move on. If they do like it, they can watch it. And then advertisers, on the flip side, there's a business model that they're actually paying only for impressions that people really liked. So Google did it very well in their own properties, and even Facebook, they also have an ad builder for both Facebook and Instagram ads that you can build data-driven personalized ads like DPA, dynamic product ads, or other stuff like that for Facebook and Instagram. But television overall does not have that. It's very hard for someone like Fox, for NBC, for CBS, for AMC to do the same thing. And this is why we invested a long time to create this ad builder or experience builder that is fully compliant with all those networks.
That's my question. You know, like, how are you able to keep this platform current with every nuance made in each of these platforms? Are they sort of automatically updated? There's some kind of API relationship with in the cloud, or how are you able to deliver across all of these platforms so quickly?
That's a great question. So what we announced right now is the authoring tool, so the front-end side of building all those experiences. But there's many years in the making is a component which is in charge of rendering all those ads, which is an SDK that is integrated into many, many apps. North of 1,000 different OTT apps have an Innovate SDK integrated in there across all different devices: Roku, Amazon Fire, Apple TV, Xbox, PlayStation, Samsung connected TV, LG, and all those. Those SDKs obviously update on an ongoing basis. And as we're adding new experiences, they're automatically propagated to all of those different endpoints.
Wow. So that's a pretty big innovation, I think. It's very, very difficult to get programmatic. No, I have to be careful. I shouldn't say programmatic. I mean app programming, app code to work like that across all of those different platforms. So that's quite an achievement, Tal.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Colin. Yes, I agree with you. And again, I always say that none of those ideas are revolutionary. I feel like everyone that has been in this space, or even just thought a lot of, about it a little bit would say that, yeah, of course, television needs to be interactive. It needs to allow people to click on their remote and all this stuff. So the idea is not where the innovation is. The innovation is about removing the friction from the system, about allowing people to really do that at scale across every device, across every TV network, and do it very easily.
So I have a follow-up question, Tal. You, one of the things you say is you provide, like, I think you said 12 different templates of interactivity that people can implement. And that brings up a really interesting question. Which ones really work? Because, you know, interrupting people's viewing is not often very good. Buying T-commerce, I'm not sure T-commerce is a really strong model. Which are the really strong models that you recommend your clients leverage?
That's an amazing question, and I think that that's I'll give you a couple of examples, but I would say that I always use this Mark Zuckerberg quote, is that I think our job is only 1% done, because we need to do a lot more to invent and rethink about that killer product. So to name two examples, one is that there's a very big collaboration that we have with Roku to create app install ads. What does that mean? That means that I'm sure you know the experience that you are on Facebook and you're getting an ad for Uber or for Candy Crush or for any type of mobile app. You can actually click and install that app immediately, because that's what the advertiser is after. The equivalent in television is that Showtime wants Showtime Anytime app installed, and HBO wants HBO Now or HBO Go installed, and Filmstruck and TNT and TBS and Crackle and Pluto TV, all those guys need app installs. So we created a product that is, the technology behind it is definitely should be called interactive video, but it's not interacting for the sake of just playing around. It's interacting for the sake of achieving a goal. In that case, I want to watch HBO in order to watch the next season of Silicon Valley, say. So at the time of an ad, I'll get a call to action that says, do you want to watch that? You can install right now. You press a button and then it installs behind the scenes, and then it just, the message changed to say, thank you very much, the channel was installed. So that's something that is really deliver value to the viewer and of course to the advertiser as well, and it's very well integrated with the platform itself, with Roku in that case.
I know that that you have been speaking positively about interactive ads for a long time, and I've been speaking at our conferences, TV of Tomorrow show, because of that. And I just want to say thank you for staying focused on that. And just before you came on, we were speaking about announcement that Netflix is going to be delivering interactive content. That was a big announcement that came out this week. For the new Black Mirror series. And so we're excited about interactivity on ads, on content. And then your partner at Hulu, Peter Naylor, was quoted as saying that people will come to expect that ads are interactive. This is a creative imperative, not a creative opportunity. And I'm curious, to what extent are your customers really using interactivity? They've just scratched the surface, I can imagine. Or are there any good examples out there where ads are interactive and they've generated, some real traction or some real revenue, and anything that sort of points to, your belief in that, that this is the right strategy, that because this is what this platform is going to be about.
Yeah. So I'll start with where you started. I think all credit and thank you goes to you for not only investing so much time and effort in creating the interactive TV industry, but making a conference and a massive publication based on that. So thank you for tooting that horn for on behalf of all of us, honestly. Specifically about interactive commercials. I truly believe that it's less about interactive and it's more about what's the goal that you are trying to achieve. People call, I also use this stupid example about Bluetooth headphone. People call it Bluetooth headphone, but no one really care about Bluetooth as the interface, the technology interface that actually delivered the message. It's more about, this is a headphone that doesn't have a wire to it. It's a wireless way to communicate with the mobile phone. So similar thing about interactive video. Yeah, we call it by the technology, But it's actually what's the most important is that what are you actually achieving or letting viewers to really get value. I gave the example of the channel install is one example. Another one, just calling out a very big partner of us that is doing amazing job in this space, is Fox Network Groups and Truex as a subdivision, is just took the same idea of interactive video and letting people essentially vote with the remote and choose how they want to watch their show. Is do I want to watch it with 12 ads or I want to watch it with one single ad, and in return I'm going to give my attention to one single sponsor. That's another technology, shameless plug, that is powered by our OTT composer that I mentioned earlier. So that's also more important than that. It's a very good example of how using interactivity to achieve a goal and give value to consumer. A third example that I can give is also another big thing that we just recently announced is a big collaboration we have with Volvo. Volvo did a very big study about the power of connected TV, and even more specific, the value that interactivity gives in order to drive sales. And again, the idea of directing people to a dealer and RFI, request for info, and things like that, has been around for a very long time. This is nothing here is new. But based on all this technology, we can allow them to do it at really large scale and reach mass portion of the population with not only an interactive ad, but also drive a lot of people to enter their details. And they've seen that the people who actually enter their details and ask for more info, that cohort got a 35% lift in sales of that group. And the reason that we managed to do all this study with them is that it was mass scale. It wasn't narrowed only to a single cable operator on certain DMA that has this interactive TV capability. That was nationwide across so many different television networks, across so many different devices, that allows them to actually deliver that message at scale.
So Tao, before we wrap up here, I wonder, do you have any examples on your website that you can, that we can point out our listeners to, that they can come and take a look at some of the creative created with the platform?
We do have a gallery on our website, on innovate.com, and we would be happy to share anything on any platform. Maybe I'll have one quick shout-out. This is something that we would never really shared on air, and maybe kind of first time over here, is that we also launched a product that we call TV Monster, which there are a lot of galleries that people can see those examples, but honestly, seeing is believing, and you need to actually play with it. So we launched a Roku app that we are sharing right now with several marketers and several agencies that we gave it to them, and a lot of people are already using that as a way to see what are the cutting edge side of the industry are doing in interactive TV. And we would love to share it with any one of your listeners, that anyone that would like to send an email to OTT@innovate.com, we would gladly send a Roku device or a link to download the app.
Tao, I've been trying to do something like that for years. I have been collecting screenshots for, 2 decades or however long I've been doing this?
Me too.
Tracy and Colin, you'll be the first one that we would very gladly send this example. And again, back to what I said at the beginning, I really think that we're just 1% done. We're investing a lot in this. There's so much more that we all can do, because it's obvious that the future will be interactive, will be engaging, will be data driven. It's a given, and I think we're at it to make it happen.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Tal. I really appreciate your jumping on here. I called you kind of at the last minute, after we decided we wanted to cover the launch of OTT Composer. So I really appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Tal.
Thank you so much.
We'll see you at the New York show, December 6th, TV tomorrow.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so, Colin, we have got one more story that we wanted to discuss, another interactive story.
We do, and it's actually it's a sort of almost tame in comparison with Tal's story, I think, because it's another story. Sony is deploying interactivity to some of its televisions, I almost laughed when I read the announcement, Tracy, because it talked about, quote, T-commerce, like it was something completely new. And of course, as you know, we've been trying to sell pizzas through televisions for probably 25, 30 years. So I don't think it sounded to me like it lacked imagination. Certainly nothing in the way that Tal was talking about it. It's, as I say, it's just interactivity to allow T-commerce on some of the Sony televisions going forward. So
I think it's on their Android sets.
Is it only on the Android sets?
I think so. And it's being enabled by Kinect, which is participant at our conferences. And we've interviewed Mike Fitzsimmons, the CEO, several times. So from what I understand, because I called actually right before we got on to find a little bit more out about this topic, they're going to add their buy now button to, programming, that you might be watching on your set. And then from what I understand, I have to go look at the screenshot, which will be available on the website when we launch this podcast, that the screen, the content will shrink slightly, a graphic will come up to the right or perhaps to the left, and you'll be able to buy, something. It's basically using their Shop TV platform that they have deployed elsewhere. I think it's on DirecTV, and you're going to be able to, buy stuff. They call it in-program purchasing. I have yet to see shows really do a great job of this, so yeah. It'll be very interesting. And strangely enough, YouTube just announced new ads that let users make third-party purchases without leaving the site. I just read that also on that was news that I read on TubeFilter. So you might want to check that out. I mean, it seems like T-commerce is coming out all over the place.
It is. And my hesitation with the Sony announcement is, as you know, Tracy, it's very difficult. If you're in the context, you have to know exactly how you're going to use this for it to be effective. If you're trying to use this in narrative content, it's probably not going to be successful. The Jennifer Aniston sweater purchase idea, it just really didn't pan out. People tried it. It didn't work. So you really have to use this when people are in a slightly different mode than they are typically when they're watching a narrative form. So content where it might be more effective is in cooking shows that people are actually watching while they're actually cooking and following directions, etc. So situations like that where it could be, of course, on shopping channels, leveraging this type of technology definitely works. It definitely helps boost sales through specific shopping channels. In some advertising, you could see it working pretty well there as well. So we'll have to see how it does.
I would say that, and I believe, being circumspect is absolutely the right attitude, because it has been very difficult to implement. We haven't seen a lot of success. However, I would say that it's worth trying, number one. Number two, live streamed programming or live programming works extremely well when you're trying to drive commerce. So I'd be curious to see if they do migrate to exploring live streaming. I know that it works, for example, for influencers on live streaming platforms like Periscope, which is still going, by the way. It's still happening every day. And maybe even Facebook and places like that. But I've seen people sell out all kinds of stuff when they're saying to their viewership, buy this, here are my paintings, here's my shirt, exactly. Here's my something. So it's possible. It's in the right context. And then I believe also that this passive in-program purchasing, in other words, passive being like you can choose to buy while you're watching the show versus live stream sort of, on-air prompting, it also will allow you to do voice-driven commerce, from what I understand. So if you you won't have to reach for your remote. You'll be able to, well, you have to have your remote right now, right? Although they haven't mentioned whether or not this works with Alexa or, you know, any of the other voices.
I was going to say, Tracy, I already have that. I mean, I can already yell at my Alexa or my Google Home to buy something for me. So that's not so interesting. But you're absolutely right. Context is everything. It works extremely effectively when the host or the focus of the show is as it were hawking the product or doing an unbox session or something like that, where they're really exposing people to products and services directly and urging them to buy it if they think it's worthwhile pursuing. So in those situations, totally makes sense to be able to do this. It's just, it's context is everything.
Well, with that final statement, I think that we've covered the news of the day. What do you think?
I think we have lots about interactive TV, our old wheelhouse, Tracy.
I'm excited. I really hope at some point that we see, you know, original new formats, new types of storytelling, although the trans, you know, when people launched programs that were called transmedia, that didn't go very well, did it?
It didn't. And with the success of connected TVs, this is a native connected platform. I am certain that we can do more than we are doing today. We haven't even touched on things like game shows, as you say, live sports. These are more natural for interaction to occur. People are already doing it with their smartphones. Is there a role for the television to play directly in this? That's a question I think that Tal and others are now beginning to ask. I can't wait to see what Netflix does with Black Mirror.
Okay, well, that's it for me. Thank you so much. And please visit Colin's website at nscreenmedia.com. That's an N, as in, I was going to say knowledgeable, but that starts with a K.
It does.
nscreenmedia.com, and my website, or our website, is itvt.com, which stands for Interactive TV Today. And our conferences are TV of Tomorrow Show coming up December 6th, tvotshow.com. You'll be there, Colin.
I certainly will.
Anything else you have at your white paper?
Not right now, Tracy. I'm going to be at the New York Media Fest week next week at the Television Day, Television Focus Day on Friday. So if folks are there, they can pop in and say hi. And I'm going to be actually doing a DTC, a direct-to-consumer panel at the NAB show on Thursday in New York the week after. So those are great opportunities if people want to stop by, say hi. Love to hear from you. Love to hear what you're doing.
All right. Well, have fun flying without me. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll speak to you next time, next week.